Welcome to East Meets West, episode 256, where we start off well, then degrade into monotonous tripe. I'm Tom Merritt.
And I'm Roger Chang. You know, once you reach 640, I mean, after that, that's all high memory area, and you really can't use it. That's for system processes.
What is that? High mem?
Yes. You know, because they're 256.
Oh, yes. Good one. Actually, I can't believe I didn't think of that.
It's a joke.
I used to like seeing that message scroll up my screen. It meant everything was booting well. My jibe about tripe is straight out of the comments. Mr. Bobo Jones says past shows of East Meets West have had validity, such as a beginning, middle, and end. This was just a mishmash of I do not know what to talk about. So what is the one thing everybody likes? Food! No wonder Roger is irritable with all the junk he eats to subdue his inner rage. It's a miracle he is still alive. I'm surprised that Tom had so little fortitude in this debacle.
No wunder. I think that was a clever play on words.
No wunder. Perhaps he is German. Well,
or just a bad
Bobo
diabetes.
Jones, I appreciate your feedback. It's always positive or negative. It's always good to get feedback. Helps you be better. But
yep.
As we have said over and over, if you have listened to previous episodes, as you imply you have, this show doesn't have a direction.
It's a show about
have a purpose.
Yes.
And if you don't like listening to it, we're okay with that. This is not one of those shows where we're like trying to, like Tech News Today, Techzilla, all the other shows Roger and I work on. The idea is to make the best show possible for the audience. And in that case, some feedback like this, we would bend over backwards to address and make sure we're doing the best show possible. East Meets West is not that. Yeah. It's totally different.
It's about bending you over backwards.
And for those few people still who like the show, Roger has now pissed you off as well. No, it is a recreational podcast. We have always been surprised and shocked that anyone
wanted
to listen.
Yes,
from our first listener Jason onwards, we're pleased when people like us. But frankly, you know, Bobo, if you didn't like it, that's cool.
Yes,
because we really don't expect it. It is that kind of show, and you can criticize it for being that, but that's like criticizing a piece of granite for being a rock. I mean,
or a rock for not being granite.
Yeah,
it's like so. So let us get onto this debacle of podcast 256.
You're going to talk about food again, aren't you? Because you went to the. Was it a county fair or a state
fair? County fair. It was the county fair. And I know that, you know,
county fair.
There are a number of these, literally thousands, if not tens of thousands, across the country.
Oh, yeah, Marin even has a couple. Like, there's the Marin County Fair, but then there's also the Sonoma Marin County Fair, and then there's the Sonoma County Fair.
And
everybody gets in on the act.
I'll freely admit, I actually have not been to a state county fair in at least a decade, if not longer. And so it was very enjoyable. It was, there was a good selection of carnival fair food, including freshly dipped corn dogs in the corn batter, and they deep fry it. Funnel cake, and then, of course, a variety of local specialities, including tacos and teriyaki bowls and, you know, a various mishmash of hyphenated ethnic cuisine that's essentially just then turned over and processed and served to people at like $8 a plate.
Yeah.
But
nice margins on that, by the way.
What's interesting, what I find so interesting about county fairs, especially ones in California, is that when people think of California, all that imagery doesn't really show up at a California county fair.
When people think, I mean, that's a different problem, though. When people think of California, they think of L.A. They think of Hollywood.
They think of
everything they've ever seen in the movies.
They think of the coastal cities. They do not think of anything inland.
They don't even really think of San Francisco. And that you can prove that by going to Fisherman's Wharf during the winter. Or I'm sorry, what we call winter, which is July, and watching the people who have all had to buy fleeces.
That says San Francisco on it.
They thought it was California and dressed in shorts and t-shirts.
Well, it's true. I mean, the model of what California is set in large part by what people watch on TV and in the movies. And what got me was, you know, how incredibly diverse the population, and of course the various pursuits that people do, and of course what drives the economy. I mean, people think California is mostly Hollywood, and then you got Silicon Valley.
I think people. I was just thinking that. I think you're right. It's people think that California is a huge Hollywood surrounded by a little bit of LA, and then there's a Golden Gate Bridge north of that that takes you to Silicon Valley and some redwoods. And then probably south, there's like a border crossing to get cheap tequila. That might be everything people think about California encapsulated. But is that so different from any other region anywhere? In fact, I think people actually know more about California and have more accurate perceptions of California percentage-wise than they do of other areas.
I don't know. I mean, I'm really curious to see because...
Have you ever been to Illinois?
I have not. Chicago's in Illinois.
Yeah, so you've been to Chicago.
Yes.
Which is different. See, yes. And there you go. Yeah. That's actually kind of where I was going is my end of Illinois, nobody gets it right. Nobody knows what's really going on there. They all think Chicago, if they don't think cornfields. First of all, there's nobody grows corn in my area. It's all mostly soy, some wheat. And it's not Chicago. It's far from Chicago. It's actually quite southern in a way. So, you know, relatively speaking, compared to a lot of the rest of the Midwest.
I mean, what brings this up is I was perusing, I mean, because I was looking for flights and I was, you know, looking for like, you know, cheap flights to Atlanta. And I got onto a weird message board because I thought it was about like, you know, how, you know, cheap airfares or good discount rates. It kind of turned into this whole kind of, well, you guys think, you know, California looks like this, or you guys think that East Coast is like this. And I realized how much of people, the way they perceive the various bits and parts of the country through a very a skewed lens. And a lot of it has to do with movies and what they watch on TV. But a lot of it also has to do with kind of the news you hear, right? I mean, you think of you don't necessarily think of defense industries at least in Northern California, but there's a huge one. I mean, Lockheed Martin has an office down here. Many of the companies that worked on avionics as well as high-end aerospace used to be located up in the San Francisco Bay Area. But when people think about these areas, they kind of distill it down to one or two things, either some sort of popular celebrity.
But that's blah, blah. It's hard not to, right?
Well, you know, I can see that for...
I mean, how
for,
many how I, can, you wait, know wait. About every region on Earth?
Well, that's my thing. It's like I can understand that outside of the country and stuff, like where people just like, well, you know, friends... Well, yeah, well, you know, you think of the Eiffel Tower, France's Eiffel Tower, baguettes, mimes. England, you know, it's London.
Not what I think of Paris, by the way. That's what Roger thinks. Just
oh, geez. Well, I'm just making an example. I'm sorry. But for some reason, I always thought people, because so many people in the U.S. tend to be very mobile. They move from one end of the country to the other for jobs or family and stuff. They wouldn't be so kind of so limited, I guess I would say, in how they perceive different ends of the country. And I realize this is one of the reasons why I think political discourse and so much of our civility and stuff seems to go out the windows, because we like to debase reduce, you know, a very reductive way various people based on where they are. Well, you think like that because you're from Texas. That's all about oil in Texas. Or you think like that because you're a West Coast liberal and you're all a bunch of, you know, you guys like eating tofu and eating soybeans and sushi.
Right.
And
that brings us back to the Alameda County Fair, which, by the way, is in Oakland?
No, it's Pleasanton.
It's in Pleasanton. Okay, so it is a little farther out, but it is in the Bay Area, and yet
it's get incredibly
the feeling that you're like out in ranch country somewhere.
There, they were doing cattle auctions while I was there. They did a horse race. They had the 4-H club with the sheep and the pigs and stuff. And it's
a county fair.
Yeah, and
I've won ribbons at a county fair for 4-H stuff before.
Ooh, do tell, Pat. Do tell.
Cookies.
Oh, I thought you were like an animal husband.
No, I never did.
My prized yak, or
my nephew has. He's done that because they actually had a farm and stuff. When I was growing up, we didn't have a farm. We pretended to be suburbanites when living in a small town. My dad worked as a research scientist, as food scientist. So he wore, you know, he dressed like he worked at IBM, you know, with the white shirt and the dark blue pants and the pocket protector. And we drove sedans, not trucks. We were masquerading the whole time. Kids at school called me a city fan. You're city folk. Because we lived in the town of 5,000 people instead of out in the country.
I never understood that when back in Modesto, back when it was under 100,000 people. And now it's like 127 or 70-something thousand people. A lot more than when I went to high school. It's like, I remember a couple of my classmates say, I don't like living in the city. I think I'll move out in the country. It's like, are you kidding? My house is surrounded by peach and almond orchards. How far away do you need to be before you no longer consider
yourself? Yeah, you'd lived long enough in San Francisco to remember it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so you had that as a point of comparison.
Yes,
which they
exactly.
And that's the thing. It's all relative. And the other point I wanted to bring up is part of this whole, like, well, not understanding other regions is also sort of a tribalism and pride for your own region. Like, well, my region is better.
Because we're more
yours
sophisticated.
Yours is just about oil or granola or rude city people. My region is where people are good and things are great and we have the best food. It's part of that self pride that you take in whatever area you're from.
And I understand that to some degree, but like half my classmates in high school had family in the Midwest somewhere, Oklahoma, Missouri, Texas, because you know their families were the ones that came out during the Great Depression. Uh-huh. During the Great Dust Bowl. And they migrated out. You know, they're Okies.
They piled grandma on top of the car and down Route 66.
It always seemed kind of weird to me because I talked to various people and they have family members around the country. It's not like they're shut off from those areas.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I grew up, I had an aunt in Arizona. I had another aunt in Alaska. Had an uncle in Tennessee. And had another uncle in Texas and, you know, cousins and stuff scattered all over the place.
And I just find it surprising because to the degree in which it manifests itself, because it seems like people, you should know better. I mean, like, you know, it's like saying L.A. is all Rodeo Drive, and it's not. Anyone who lives right in and around L.A. obviously knows it is not.
I think you are. I mean, I agree with you, but I think you are fighting human nature a little bit. To realize that there, I have to admit, everywhere I've ever lived, and I've lived a lot of different places, I've started to develop this totally illogical pride about the location, you know. And recently, I was very curious about moving to San Rafael because I've always kind of not looked askance at Marin, but always thought of Marin as a place that's like not that interesting to me to live in.
It's a bunch of boring, rich white folks.
It's the place I drive through on the way to Sonoma County to go wine tasting. And it's nice and it's beautiful and all of that, but it's not one of those places that was high on my list. But because of the convenience of living near the city and near Petaluma where my job was, where my two jobs are, it turned out to be the right place. And I was like, great. So I was like, am I going to develop that pride of place this time? And I have to say, I kind of am. I find myself defending San Rafael, like, oh, San Rafael's different from the rest of Marin. Oh, well, you know, my area, my neighborhood has got, you know, it's a lot of distinct architectural stuff that you don't find in other areas. And we have this great little shopping center with these amazing restaurants. And it's natural, you know, and I have to check myself, like, am I just being silly? Or which of these things are actually true?
Well, what's interesting you say that's because I always kind of looked down on Modesto a little bit, just because it was a big cow town. I mean, you had Tri-Valley Growers. They do all the canning during the summer for the tomatoes. I worked in the restaurant during the summer and at my mom's coffee shop. And, you know, there's truck drivers, guys who work the lumber mill across the street and stuff like that. But when I left, I tended to be a little more, like, defensive when people would knock the city for being, like, the meth capital
funny,
of California.
Isn't it? Yeah, you just
kind of... And Modesto is the meth capital of the world, after Fresno, or at least in California. And you know...
Capital of California, not the world?
No, meth capital of California. I don't know about the world. I don't know what the meth capital of the world is.
I just started watching Breaking Bad, speaking of. Albuquerque seems like would have, might, you know, if anything in that show is true, might have a,
you know, and you know, it used to be number one for car thefts in the country. I mean, people were just stealing cars per capita. Just not per capita, just stolen total, cars.
Just gross. Wow, that's impressive.
Just stealing cars. It was just ridiculous. Yeah. And I mean, there was a bad, you know, 5 years there. And but still, when people knock, it's like, well, you know, it's not that bad. It's, you know, you got this. It has the same crap that any other city has. And then, you know, you make fun of Stockton for being the hellhole it is, even though University of the Pacific's located.
Unless you're from Stockton, at which point right now you're listening to the show going, hey, wait a minute. Stockton's it's not so bad.
At least it's so funny because there's that knock-on effect. You read in any city where there's, like, for example, in the SF Chronicle, the online version, sfgate.com, they have a crime section where they, you know, they list out the days, you know, homicides, burglars, and all that stuff. Every time you go to the comment section, people will automatically make all these grandiose, broad-based, you know, stuff. Well, it's because blah, blah, blah in that city. And da 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 in that city, and it's just gonna go all over it. And it's just so it is very tribalist, but it's so schoolyard to a degree that seems ridiculous. It seems absurd.
And but it comes from a very instinctual place. It's and I feel like my theory is it's the same part of our brain, part of our wiring that feeds nationalism. That feeds sports ties.
I totally agree.
Political party ties. It's just wanting to feel a part of something.
The biggest one is like West Coast versus East Coast, right? You have that in various shades. You have that among, you know, upwardly mobile people. Well, I prefer New York over California or like San Francisco, LA for yada 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 reasons. You know, there's seasons in the East Coast. There's no seasons in California. It's, you know, people more sophisticated. People won't wear white socks with suits in the East Coast. And
it goes, well, people are so uptight on the East Coast. They don't, you know, they get upset if you wear white socks with suits.
It's like, what, they can't, they're uptight all the time. Yeah. Everything is, they got to be somewhere, you know, they talk too
they're
fast.
Rude and they're rushed and they don't enjoy life.
And it's and you know you even I mean even the whole East Coast West Coast rap thing that was going on.
Oh, right. Yeah.
I don't know if it's still going on, but it's bizarre because in many cases it's so arbitrary. I mean, these are things that are so. It's one thing to say about nationalism or some sort of ethnic identity that's been built up over hundreds or thousands of years, but I mean, it's so relatively new.
Well, the U.S. nationalism is extraordinarily strong and is not tied to ethnicity, or I mean, it's not entirely tied to ethnicity, and it's not built up over more than a couple hundred years. And yet it's, I was thinking about this on our Independence Day weekend last week, like how unique it is that American nationalism is so strong because it's invented. It's entirely invented.
Well,
the people who grow up and live in the Pacific Northwest have almost nothing in common with the people who grow up in the Deep South. And yet, they all pull together for the flag, for the symbol. They all pull together for their, quote, country. But against the Canadians, you know, even, like, they're Canadians. And it's a good-natured sort of thing. They're not our enemies or anything. But there is a sort of sense of, like, we're better and vice versa. But it's an arbitrary line.
Oh, all of it really is, if you go far back enough. And it speaks, it's just an interesting, very fascinating look at the way societies develop. I mean, and the reason I bring up, you know, the regionalism thing and the stuff, I mean, people in the same state don't understand what's available in this state. You know, when they think of, you know, people, I know people live in the Bay Area, and they haven't gone any farther north than, say, San Rafael or any further south than L.A. And Their only concepts of the state are either the SF Bay Area, the LA metro area, or Yosemite, and that's it. That's for them. That's the entire state. Everything else is kind of, you know, empty and desolate, and you know, you drive through it very quickly. I don't know. I mean, going to that fair just reminded me kind of the cultural separation there is even a 50 miles away. It is simple 50 mile drive, and you're in completely different territory. And
I always think about this sort of stuff when I get to hearing about trade, free trade issues or immigration issues, and why it's okay that anybody can move from French-speaking counties in Maine to heavily Spanish-speaking areas of New Mexico and take a job away from someone down there. That's perfectly fine. It's all within the same country. We're all Americans, right? Supposedly, quote unquote. But yet it's horrible. It's a horrible idea for someone to come up from Juarez to Albuquerque and take
a shorter distance.
Or someone to even come from Halifax, you know, over into northern Maine and take a job. That would be awful. And I know that there are real short-term practical issues about immigration and free trade that I'm overlooking here, but really just taking a step back from those political realities of the moment and saying, if we were able to solve all the short-term stuff, in the long term, why is it okay to have no borders and total freedom within this arbitrary area that we've created versus the rest of the world?
I think, and you know what, it really comes down to whose laws and whose rules we follow. And I think, you know, it's...
I want to make it clear, before I let you go on, and I will let you go on, but I want to make it clear, when I ask that question, I'm asking the question. I'm not stating, I believe, therefore, all borders should go away. I'm saying there's a different answer, and there's some good answers to that question. But there's a different answer to that question than the short-term answer. And I think ultimately it's a goal to shoot for. And nobody really wants to say that. Nobody wants to admit that.
Well, I mean, you know, I take back, you know, what I was saying about the Great Depression, the Dust Bowl. I mean, the whole thing, the Graves of Wrath, was about migrant workers that weren't wanted but were needed at the same time in the state of California.
Oh, yeah, talk about internal migration starting to become an issue. I mean, there were border checks in California.
There were
people turned away from California who were tax-paying United States citizens. They were encouraged to be turned. They legally couldn't stop them.
But they tried to stop them.
They did everything they could to find a reason to turn them away. Vagrancy, tax laws,
cultural pollution. They were searching your cars. You know, if you make sure you didn't have any out of state produce that could possibly carry a parasite.
Anytime you cross into California, and you see one of those fruit checkpoints. When you come into California, they'll check your car for fruit. Right, that's a legacy from the Dust Bowl. It's still necessary. I'm not saying it's unnecessary, because there is a huge fruit fly problem and all of that. But it's left over from that time of trying to come up with things to turn people away.
I mean, I remembered when my family moved to the Central Valley. I mean, there was a strong resentment against people from the Bay Area. They're increasing property. Property prices are going up because of you. You know, there's more traffic. A whole way of life is changing. I mean,
That's true. Any region that's growing, it starts to build up a prejudice against the outside.
And I remember people used to tell me, that left the state, how much people really didn't like Californians, especially people
Texas. The Pacific Northwest. I moved from Austin to San Francisco. People were cheering. They're like, yeah, take it back to them. See how they like it when we invade them. I mean, I wasn't even originally from Texas, but whatever.
And it's just like they were like, they're just, you know, people had all this. I had all these, you know, essentially, they had all these. Californians are rich. They're snobby. They drive too fast. They're self-interested, conceited people. And, you know, it was like...
It's true. It's all true. Now that I've moved here, I've become all of those things.
You actually have, Tom.
And you've always been all of those things.
I cannot deny any of that. Except I'm fabulous, Tom. Regardless.
Right. Well, the self-conceit is a good defense mechanism against
realizing
how
horrible. It's actually one of the best defense mechanisms on the planet. But yeah, it's just, but I do want to point out that, you know, even as a, you know, a united or a single national entity, the country still has these conflicts between people. When you have a large migration of or a significant migration of people from one area to another, it will always cause some sort of schism between the people already there and the people coming in.
And I think that's what causes immigration laws, not the rational reasons for controlling immigration, you know, and making sure that the population doesn't grow too fast and then you have the resources to provide for everyone based on the tax base. Those are all very good reasons to control immigration, but that's not why we have it. The reason we have it is what you just talked about, because you can point to a border and go, aha, I may not be able to keep the Californians from coming and moving into my town, but by golly, I can keep everyone outside of the border. So I'm going to fight for immigration laws.
I mean, there were kind of weird things, I think, set in motion in the late 80s, various states to make sure. I mean, there's one reason. I mean, for example, take out-of-state and in-state tuition. I mean, the whole argument is that people in-state have been paying, you know, through their parents by their taxes into the school system, and therefore people out of the state should pay more. I mean,
those differences have closed to the point that there's, in some states, there's hardly any difference anymore.
Yeah. And
they kept raising the in-state tuition. California is not, there's still a difference, but it's not nearly as cheap for in-staters as it used to be. It used to be nigh upon free.
Oh, yeah, in the early 60s and stuff, and not anymore. But.
And University of Illinois, it was a significant discount when I went to the University of Illinois to be in-state. But now, my nephew's going to the University of Illinois, it's like a slight discount. It's, you know, it's like having a coupon, 10% off.
I don't know. It's just it's a very interesting, you know, deconstruction of like a human of society in a very small area, like, you know, the county fair.
If I wanted to move to London or Vancouver, I feel like I should be able to. But what do you think? I mean, what are the good reasons for keeping people out of these arbitrary lines that we've drawn?
And
they're not so arbitrary in places like Europe, where there's also some real ethnic history behind it. But it's in North America, it's all just made up. People just drew lines on the map.
You know, it ultimately, it kind of depends on the people who are on the receiving end. Do they want you or not? I'm of the opinion.
Why can I go to Seattle whether they want me or not, but I can't go to Vancouver?
Maybe you shouldn't be able to go to Seattle if they don't want you.
Maybe I shouldn't, you mean?
Yes. That's what I said. I'm not saying that you shouldn't be able to go to Seattle.
But
it's
why?
Just a question.
I guess that what I'm getting at is why? Why does it matter?
I don't know.
Isn't it good for the world to have us, you know, all sharing and moving and finding the place that's best for us, the place where we fit in the best?
I don't know. I mean, like, you know, in every society, even in animal communities, I mean, you have a conflict when, for example, a pride of lions from outside tries to move into a pre-established.
Yeah, but we've gotten past that. I mean,
have we?
Yeah. I mean,
I'm
not saying we've shed it entirely, but if I move into a city, I don't get driven out with stakes.
Like, you never know, Tom.
It's immigration law I'm talking about, not just the tribalism.
Yeah, but, you know.
I've been a new person in a lot of cities, and I have not been driven off by a pride of lions yet.
You just wait, Tom. There's a pride out there with your name on it or somewhere or something.
Is that what the pride parade is about?
See, you got in a joke, too, or a pun.
That's how I win my way into the.
Oh, look, I'm such a funny guy. You can't kick me out. I've always wondered, like, it's like one of those things where, like, it's the end of the world and there's only so many supplies and who gets what. How would that divvy up? Would people just automatically hoard what they have and not share it because they're afraid?
No, they would. They would share it. They absolutely would share it. Not everybody would share. Obviously, there's sociopaths, but they'll share it with people they know. And that's what a lot of this is about, too. It's, I don't know those people. Why should I allow them into my country? Why should I allow them to have my resources? Why, you know.
I said the same.
I get a pass into everywhere in the United States because I'm from the United States. So it's like the one little shred of thing people can go, well, I guess I kind of know you because you're from the United States. But that's so arbitrary. I didn't get to pick. I just happened to be born here. But it's all about, no, once you know somebody, what, you know, all of a sudden your opinions about what's right and wrong for them change.
Sometimes when you get to know somebody, you actually think even less of them, but I won't go into those.
Yes, you may. I think you're right. I think you may think less of them in some cases, but you'll actually defend them more than you will a stranger. Most people will. You're a sociopath. That's different. No. But
I'm honest. If there's someone I don't like, I won't defend them.
I don't know. I think even you would probably defend equally horrible people more
naive,
if you know them than if you don't.
You're naive. You believe in the spirit of humanity.
No. We should have a controlled. We should have a control, and see take two people that are equally evil. One that you know and one that you don't, and see how you treat them. Of course, we can't tell you that we're going to do it, or else it'll ruin it.
How many rounds do I get?
We'd have to have enough to make it statistically significant. I'd say 10.
All right.
We'll try
10 bullets. Awesome.
Hey, we're almost out of time because we arbitrarily draw a line on our time. So there you go. There's sometimes arbitrary lines are worthwhile or necessary. Otherwise, we'd just do this forever. But lots of great comments. We obviously mentioned Bobo Jones. We thank Bobo for his comment. Chandler Bing wrote 20 days between shows. Yes, you're absolutely right.
We're working on stretching that out a little bit more. Yep. That's just time.
21. Paul Seven said our last podcast made him so hungry because
I hope he ate something since then.
LT Siver or Lieutenant Siver maybe said he agrees with you about restaurants where the cooks smoke over salting the food. Totally. Good old Russ 960, a familiar face in the forum, says I will say significant use of salt in barbecue is important, especially when you have fatty rich meats. Not a huge salt person and almost never add it to dishes, but I will say barbecue needs it. Craig Denniston, have you guys ever tried poaching a fish in the dishwasher? I've heard of this. I've seen the videos that Craig posted. I've never been brave enough to try it.
I would think that's a very fuel efficient way to cook something, unless you're washing dishes at a very high temperature at the same time.
Stalin Vlad said his dad was a chef. All capitals, C-H-E-F, and said that on the subject of salt, his dad always said, you can't take it back out if you add too much, and if people want more, they can add it at the table.
Exactly.
Also, thanks to Kvolk. Tom, I keep forgetting to explain. I post as K. Volk, first letter, then last name. Oh, okay. So, posting by K. Volk says, we're talking K's language when it comes to food. I think you guys made great points about seasoning, and the real issue is what do you like when cooking for yourself? Eva had a couple of comments. There are two paid-for links at the top advertising real Ukrainian brides when Eva searches East Meets West.
Huh,
I wish we were
nice.
Getting money for that. And number two, is freshly ground pepper really that revolutionary over there? Fascinating.
It's not. It's just revolutionary when they have it in a disposable pepper mill.
Yes, right. It was the disposability, the convenience of having like a full-on pepper mill that you could just toss later. That was the revolutionary aspect of that. I actually have a pepper mill that was my grandparents' pepper mill that I use for grinding peppers. So it's been around. Just, you know.
Yeah.
We gave a misimpression on the state of ground pepper
in this country.
States. Yeah. But thanks, everybody, for your comments. Keep them coming. Subrilliant.com/EMW. Whether you like us or don't, we don't really care.
We
prefer you like us, obviously. We're human.
And Frank Costell, just so we don't leave him out, did mention something about...
Frank, I'm sorry.
A study where, books, which How to Change Things When Change is Hard by Chip Heath, show that most big problems can be solved by small changes. He uses an example of switching people from whole milk to skim milk, and improved eating habits drastically in poor countries. Whereas, basically, because whole milk has so much fat, and he says, as much as 5 strips of bacon. Wow, a big glass, I guess, of whole milk has as much saturated fat as 5 strips of bacon.
Well, yes, that is true, and that is a good thing. But I would still argue that's not a silver bullet. You can't just go in and tell everybody, "Hey, switch over to non-fat milk," because they won't do it. That's why I say it's complex.
We can get at
different reasons why people are obese.
We can go into that next podcast.
Yes, exactly. All right, thanks, Roger.
Thank you, Tom.
Hanging about. Sobrilliant.com/EMW is our website. Thanks to Scott Johnson and the Frog Pants Network for hosting us. And we will thank you most of all for listening. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Network. For more information about this and other shows, visit frogpants.com. Audio program so good, it's like you're there.